This podcast is brought to you by Hartford Funds.
How can financial advisors improve their clients' satisfaction by truly understanding the psychology through which clients make choices? Welcome to a special edition of Hartford Funds' Human-Centric Investing Podcast. I'm your host, personal finance expert Farnoosh Torabi of Bloomberg Media Studios. Today, we're exploring what's called choice architecture. It's the science of structuring the way people make choices to help them arrive at better outcomes. It's been used on everything from organ donation to 401k plans. And we're joined by one of the intellectual godfathers of behavioral economics, Professor David Lapson. He chairs the economics department at Harvard University and leads the university's Foundations of Human Behavior Initiative. David, welcome to the podcast.
Very glad to be here.
So choice architecture, I guess a more familiar way of describing this is to nudge, perhaps.
Exactly. It just means setting up the environment so that people can make decisions more easily and not just make the decision in your mind, but also execute the decision using some kind of tool.
So I'll tell you a quick story. When I was just starting out in the workforce, I remember my decision to invest in my 401k for the first time. I was forcefully nudged by a very persistent human resource manager. And so that wasn't exactly choice architecture so much as maybe persuasion.
Yeah. That's a kind of choice architecture.
Is it? Okay. But tell us what the science is really telling us about this.
So you got it the retail way. Someone had to actually talk you into it, and that turns out to be very socially costly. The choice architecture that we're understanding now is doing it in a way that is more scalable, more cost-effective. So for example, in the 401k domain, rather than having a conversation that ends with, okay, I'll do it, we automatically enroll people in a 401k plan. And that's been shown to make a night and day difference in enrollment rates in these plans. Auto-enrollment takes the participation rate up from about 40% to 90 or 95%. Only 5 or 10 percentage points of employees opt out after they're auto-enrolled.
What is the reason behind this? What is it that as human beings we are attracted to this and this works for us?
So we've done a lot of work on that with my co-authors John Beshears, James Choi, Bridget Madrian, and we find that overwhelmingly the American public thinks they should be saving more in general for a rainy day fund, for retirement. They get it.
We get it.
The problem is that translating that good intention into action takes a lot of steps. You've got to open up the documents, you've got to read them, you've got to figure them out, you've got to then make a phone call, you've got to make some choices. So all of that activity gets in the way of actually getting the job done. And you'd think, well, that's only an hour of time to read all of the explanatory documents, make the phone call to human resources, enroll in the savings plan. But turns out that hour of time is an enormous barrier, and some people end up procrastinating for 2, 3, 4 years before they finally get around to enrolling. So we need to make all of that process easier or maybe even automatic.
You mentioned auto-enrollment as one example of a great way to nudge someone into, say, a 401k plan. What are some other ways to incorporate the science and to make your clients have a better relationship with their money or just be smarter with their financial decisions?
So another technique that we've studied is something called active choice, which is essentially asking people to make a decision and stop procrastinating. With auto-enrollment, you automatically enroll someone. With active choice, nothing happens automatically. What you say to the individual is, hey, this is a really important decision, and we're going to take some time right now and make the decision, and there's maybe a deadline or some other mechanism that generates the space for that decision to get made. Now, it could be a no or it could be a yes, but ask the individual to take the time to dedicate the bandwidth to actually make a decision. And there, too, we see that people drastically accelerate their participation. We go from a, let's say, opt-in system where there's only 40% participating in a 401k plan to a 70% participation rate when we use active choice. And we tell new employees, hey, you've really got to make a decision, yay or nay, take the time, figure this out.
But a deadline is very helpful.
Exactly, the deadline. And I think so often in life, it's that deadline that turns the procrastination and the good intentions from a disaster where nothing ever gets done to actually completing the task, making the decision, doing the thing that we know we should do, but have been delaying for years.
part of what makes personal finance overwhelming is that, like you mentioned, there's paperwork, there's fine print. A lot of us didn't get the education, so we feel like it's above our heads. How do you make it simple? Because that's also part of the framework that has to be there. The simplification is really key. How can advisors simplify the process for their clients?
So often there's a default option that can be created. Rather than telling people, here's this choice that has 18 different dimensions, one can say, hey, here's what most people are doing, or here's what I recommend. And when you take the choice from, I have to make 18 separate decisions to get this done, to it being, well, I can accept the default or I can decline, suddenly it becomes a very simple yay or nay decision. So simplification, where we pre-populate a lot of the subtle elements and we say, this is a kind of recommended path. And now all you've got to do is think about this pre-designated option and ask, do I want it or do I not want it?
I know personally for my husband and I, you know, we knew that when we got married and wanted to have children, there were certain things on our checklist. We just knew as responsible human beings, we had to check off life insurance, an estate plan, a will. These aren't necessarily topics that we were bouncing up and down, you know, addressing, but we knew we had to do it and we got through it. I'm putting that in air quotes. We got through it. And I think that for the average person, those are mundane topics, let's be honest. You don't want to think about the what ifs. You don't want to think about death. You don't want to think about tragedy. How do you make, as an advisor, how do you make these topics not only seem important, but can I dare say, you know, enjoyable? Like, let's go through a life insurance policy. Let's create an estate plan. It's fun, I promise. You know, that's got to be part of it too. You have to make it compelling. Maybe not fun, but just compelling. How do you do that?
I think it's making these things simple, which makes them easier, and it's creating deadlines. They can be something as simple as, hey, I know you're busy right now. Why don't we get together? An advisor says, why don't we get together in 3 weeks and talk about it? But actually put something on a calendar. So there's an opportunity and a commitment to get something done. In my own life, when I had an advisor helping me with my estate planning, I said, hey, I'm so busy now. Mm-hmm. I couldn't possibly focus on this in the moment. And my advisor said, hey, we'll do this in 2 months. And he gave me some work to do over those 2 months. And I planned to do that work continuously over those 2 months. And of course, I did all the work the night before the meeting.
Right, right.
But it was great because finally, I got the job done. I filled out the forms. I came to his office and we did all the things that I knew I wanted to do and would never have done on my own or would never have gotten around to without the commitment of that appointment.
Commitment. That's the other thing I was going to try to bring up. Part of your research is that that's also an important aspect of the this sort of choice architecture, is to have that implemented. And the good news, I suppose, for the industry is that this is all free stuff they can implement. This is, doesn't require, you know, creating some software or technology or increasing your, you know, your worker, employee staff. It's just literally these small tweaks, deadlines, making it simple, making sure that there is some sort of level of commitment. That's good news.
Exactly. Yeah. None of these things are rocket science. Very easy to do and very much aligned with the interests of the household investor. The American public knows they want to save more. They know they want to think about planning for the future. They know that there are all of these issues that hang over them and they are looking for solutions and are happy to make that commitment in the form of an appointment to actually get it done. Just don't ask me to do it this weekend.
Right. Thanks for joining us today, David. This is really compelling stuff. And for listeners who want to learn more about the topics that we've discussed or about other ways in which psychology affects investors and their financial decisions, please visit humancentricinvesting.com. Until next time, I'm Farnoosh Tarabi, and this has been the Hartford Funds Human-Centric Investing Podcast.
This podcast, brought to you by Hartford Funds, was produced by Bloomberg Media Studios. Hartford Funds has engaged Farnoosh Tarabi to conduct this interview. Farnoosh Tarabi is not an employee of Hartford Funds. David Labson is the chair of Harvard University Economic Department, which is not affiliated with Hartford Funds. The views expressed herein are those of the speakers David Labson and Farnoosh Tarabi. Hartford Funds is not responsible for and does not validate any information, opinions, assertions, or statements expressed in this podcast, which are for informational purposes only and are subject to change based on prevailing market, economic, and other conditions. The views expressed may not reflect the opinions of Hartford Funds. They should not be construed as investment or fiduciary advice, nor should they be considered an offer or solicitation to buy or sell any security. Individual results discussed herein may not be representative of the experience of other individuals and are not a guarantee of future performance or success.